Okay, welcome back. We're going to talk about a little something a little different this hour. Bigfoot, Bigfoot, Bigfoot. I've been covering Bigfoot on this program for, well, 1994, and it's a fascinating story. I honestly think we're to the point now where we really don't have much reason to even speculatively doubt it. It's obviously a species. I don't necessarily think it comes from another dimension. I think it's a great ape of some kind. Maybe it's the missing link kind of an ape. These are obviously very smart animals, whatever they are, but they're all over the place. And more and more people are seeing them. More and more people with cell phone cameras are getting little videos of them. And they are very provocative, some of these videos, no question. We have a new guest to the program tonight. His name is Rich Germau, I believe. You want to pronounce your last name, Rich? Make sure I got it right.
It's pronounced Germau.
Germau. I was close. I got it.
Don't feel bad.
No problem. All right. Now, you're a researcher of some time. Rich has had a really unique encounter, and we're going to talk about that as well. He got a real good look, broad as day, of one of these big guys walking right across the road in front of him. So this will be fun to hear about as well. Tell us about your background in this field, Rich. Was that sighting how it all started for you, this research and investigation?
Well, I was initially I was a police officer, and first I had a sighting on duty in the year 2000 where one crossed the road in front of me while I was in my patrol car during daylight hours.
That was the sighting I was alluding to, I think. And
yeah.
You talked about how fluidly the animal was moving, not walking like a human, kind of bouncing along.
Well, yeah, I mean, very smooth, eloquent, I guess, in its motion, where it, a human has a head bob to it as it walks, and this thing had nothing. Like that, it just kind of glided smoothly, you know, as it stepped across the road.
That's very interesting. And we've seen videos of these things. Even the Patterson-Gimlin film shows a very smooth walking animal.
For sure, yeah. So, yeah, real similar to that. That's, what I saw the first time. I've had a couple different encounters, but
Let me spend a little bit more time on that first one. You're a police officer. You're out just on patrol. Were you responding to something? What brought you to the area of this sighting, and what was the surrounding territory like? You had a road going through forest, through trees, through open country. What was it like?
Well, I was a tribal reservation cop at that time. And I was working like a swing shift where my shift started about 7 p.m.
Uh-huh.
And I was driving into work, actually, and we had our patrol cars at home, so we would drive our cars home and then
sure.
drive them back to work. And so I was coming in for a shift, and I was coming down onto the reservation. So I had passed a couple housing areas, and then it comes up to the beach, you know. This is in LaPush, Washington, so that's where the Twilight books are based on. And
oh, okay.
I was actually turning the corner past a national park trailhead that's on the reservation, and
mm-hmm.
then coming down along the beach where I'm coming down into the lower reservation, and you get to this place called Lonesome Creek, and I was about probably 70 yards or so from the creek, and the thing just steps out from the brush on one side of the road, takes about four steps, and hits the edge of a fence line, which surrounds a little fish hatchery on the other side of the road. And the beach is just beyond, you know, where this thing came out of the brush at.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, it's pretty busy that time of year with tourists, and there's a lot of surfers and stuff down there. And there was actually quite a few people down there that day. This was early July, like I said, the year 2000. And it was just over, you know, fairly quick. It kind of played in slow motion as I saw it, because it was such a abnormal, you know, shocking thing.
Oh, I would
think. It just catches you completely off guard, you know, to see something like that. You weren't expecting it. You're totally relaxed, and just boom, it's right there in front of you. And so, yeah, that it was right there in La Push, Washington.
So you're looking down the road, 50 yards away from it, or thereabout. It comes left to right as you're looking, or right to left as you're looking at it?
Left to right, and I was traveling north.
Okay, left to right, and it stepped out of the brush. Was the brush as tall as this being? I'll call it a being. As this being is? Was it?
Well,
or it come out from behind trees?
Kind of like that. It came up a few steps from a lower elevation where this creek is at, because the road is up on a grade. It's a paved road where a culvert goes under the road. And this thing was kind of right there at the creek. And so there's some what you would call reap rod, you know, just small deciduous trees and some sort of brush that was up beyond the beach, you know. Because, okay, let me say, from that point to the saltwater, probably 250 yards or so. And between that, at the saltwater at the beach is kind of a camping area, and there's a big turnaround down there where cars could park and go surfing and stuff. You know, and to the left of it, you know, runs towards the national park. And, you know, pretty much, I mean, there's paths down through these trees and this brush that go down to sea level, but it rises up, you know, sort of as a cliff where it gets up high off of the water. I would say probably, you know, 50 to 70 feet up above. And takes you down parallel to the National Park Trail that they call Second Beach Trail, you know, if you were to, you know, go
so
to the south.
What I think I hear you saying is that there were people out and about, and this thing was, you know, maybe viewable by other people? I guess people have seen this?
No, it just so happens that where it came out and crossed, there wouldn't have been. You'd have to be on the road to see it. You couldn't see it from a lot. There was no other location to see it. Because on the right side, it's trees, and then it goes up an elevation up to a housing area. And it would only the only path would be to go along the fence and behind the fish hatchery to stay into the wood line.
Okay.
So go ahead.
What did it look like, Rich?
Well, it was large, you know. I noticed it was very thick from back to chest. You could see that it was all one color. It wasn't wearing clothes or anything. It was all a dark brownish or dark or black.
Right.
You know, at that time,
It was close to black?
Well, it was very dark, you know, brown at least.
Right.
You know, dark, and I mean, from head to toe, it didn't couldn't see any facial features. It didn't look at me. I saw completely a profile view, and like I said, it never looked at me. It wasn't running or anything. It was just moving, you know, what I would say would be swiftly, just a swift stride. That was very smooth.
He or she didn't look at you.
Nope, it just took. Walked directly across the road, and where it crossed at was right at the corner of that fence line, so it just caught the edge of it and went right through the salmonberry bushes and disappeared into the brush.
What were your thoughts in your mind, if you remember any, at that time?
Well, you know, as a police officer, I'm a trained observer.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, and I'm credible in court. And so my observations are important because they're considered evidence.
You bet.
And I knew what it was, but it couldn't be that because it's not real. So I was, you know, trying to place it in a box in my mind for classification, and it kept getting kicked out. And this all happened, and you know, in a matter of a few seconds, but it seemed like a very long time where I was trying to rationalize and reason this thing. And, you know, I was pretty shocked and excited at the same time. I wasn't in fear because I was in the car. And, I mean, it's one of those things where you see something that is not supposed to be real, and then all of a sudden it's right in front of you. And your mind has to deal with it at that point. And, you know, it didn't take me very long to admit to myself, you know, that what I had seen, even though it was unbelievable. And I sat there what seemed like forever, but it was probably only a matter of several, you know, seconds after I saw it. And because I came to a complete stop probably at about 50 yards from where it crossed. Mm-hmm. And after I kind of slow rolled after it first, when I first saw it, and I was just kind of shooken up a little bit. And then I continued to drive into the office, which was only a couple, you know, more miles or less from that location. And when I mm-hmm. got there, my sergeant was there, a county deputy for Clallam County, and then another coworker, patrol officer.
Uh-huh.
And then when I walked in, obviously they clearly saw that something happened to me. I must have looked and shaken up or white, I don't know. And I said, yeah, you guys, they said, what happened to you? And I said, well, you'll never believe it, but I just saw a Bigfoot cross the road at Lonesome Creek. You know, and then they started to razz me a little bit. And, you know, like you would expect. But ultimately, you know, they more or less confided in me because they had had or seen things before, too, in the woods around there because it's kind of a wilderness area, you know, in the rainforest where we're at by Forks, Washington.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I was going to ask about that. So they weren't shocked by it.
Well, they really were shocked because it's not something you would talk about, especially in the early 2000s. You know, it wasn't as a well-accepted topic as we have today. It came with more scrutiny. You know, it took guts to speak up and say you had an experience or you saw something at that point. And,
right, that's true. Conversationally back then, some people, I'm sure, a lot of people probably, have seen things like this, and they never talk about it.
Expect so. I'm not that kind of person. You know, I'm pretty open related mm-hmm. to it, and mm-hmm. I never had a problem with if a topic came up, which, you know, that's the kind of topic in the Pacific Northwest, especially in law enforcement and other things, where you hear it every now and again, it gets brought up, you know, and people talk about it, and mm-hmm. I'd say, yeah, well, I saw one on duty, you know, and I tell them about it, and so, yeah, it was pretty life-changing event.
I was just going to ask you the last question about this sighting. What did it do to you? It had to have almost instantly changed your frame of reference about the whole subject.
Sure. Your perspective starts to change, and then you start to look back at your life prior to, and how you were experiencing and the things that you were doing. And like, for instance, for me, I spent a lot of time outdoors. That's one of the reasons, or the main reason why I moved out to that area. You know, mm-hmm. it was a couple hours from where I was from, and it was mostly because of the fishing and the outdoor activities and stuff, and that I was, you know, out there. And I spent a lot of time in remote areas, especially steelhead fishing and stuff, where I was by myself, you know, for, you know, all day a lot of times. And I would go for several miles, mm-hmm. you know, off-road and stuff up these rivers and in different places. And, you know, many times during that I felt watched, and you saw a lot of mountain lion tracks and bear tracks and things like that. And you were always thinking that it was some known animal that was watching you, and your gut instinct, your intuition was, you know, telling you, you know, there's something out there that's watching you. And
I got it.
Just something you're picking up on, but I never assumed it was could be something like that. But then after I saw that thing, you know, when you see something that probably is in the range of 8 feet tall and probably, you know, around 800 pounds or so. And it's humanoid, but it's not human. You realize immediately that, you know, these are undocumented for a reason. And, you know, at that time, you have to consider that it's likely because of its intelligence, you know, that's able to navigate, you know, all of the technology and all the people. Because even back then there was, you know, technology in roads and people driving in cars, and people had cameras and stuff on them. Not like today, but, I mean, it's hard to avoid, you know, if you're something like that, especially if you're in that close proximity to people in civilization, that you can remain, you know, undocumented and hidden. And it takes a great deal of intelligence, you know, and tactics, I guess you could say, to do that type of thing. And
Very fair word to use there. I agree.
You know, and being a police officer, you know, and I ultimately was a SWAT team member and a police detective during my career and stuff. And, you know, uh-huh. you're trained and out of necessity just for survivability to use tactics in, you know, in your job and to strategize and plan and, you know, play out scenarios in your mind constantly and things of that nature. And you can't help but realize that this is a dominant thing that's out there, especially the fact that it's avoiding humanity and able to live outside of us like that without us even really knowing about it. And,
right.
You know, I'll be well, honest you... that...
Go ahead. No, you.
Well, you know, one of my first thoughts, and I've talked about this numerous times, you know, after I saw this thing, one of the first things, I was angry a little bit because, you know, I was a trained professional. I'd been through the educational system, through public schools,
yes.
you know, through military training, police training and whatnot. And nobody ever saw fit to inform us about these things and that we might encounter them, you know, and prepare you for the psychological hit that you're going to take and the trauma that you're going to experience because of seeing something like this. Because it starts to, not with everybody, with me, though, it started to change everything over a period of time. And it really did change my behavior. And I wasn't as, I won't say reckless, but I didn't experience the freedom that I did before with the things that I did. Let's just say that. I didn't.
Interesting.
I was concerned about continuing to go do the stuff that I did, you know, alone out there, just because of the mere fact that something that, you know, I sized this thing up and I had to consider all the aspects of it and the potential risk and danger, because at this point, these things are still not documented or, you know, nobody has, there's no disclosure. So, you know, you got to consider that, you know, these things could potentially make you disappear if they want to. And,
I think,
there's really nothing
I
you can
so.
Do about it because they have the intelligence level that no weapon or gun or anything like that is going to give you any advantage to it. If it's, you know, wants to make you disappear, it'll just grab you and it'll be over. Right.
I understood what you said. This is King of the Forest is what it is. It's a dynamic in the forest that is so big and so unequivocally powerful that I would feel, very much concerned about heading off alone and out there. And at 8 feet, 800 pounds, there's nothing going to stop that thing. Nothing. Probably can run 35 miles an hour.
Well, I mean, they move. I can tell you that from my second experience that I had, and I won't get into that because you haven't asked anything about it yet, but I could tell you that one thing I noticed just because, again, you know, the tactical aspects of it, when I saw it and it moved really quick, and that's something I noticed of it is that the speed was unnatural.
Mm-hmm.
It was like something that you would see in a superhero movie or a cartoon of
I'm with
extremely
you. I'm following this. This is
fast,
interesting.
So fast, it was terrifying to see it move that quick and silently. When it moved, it didn't make a noise. So, and you know it. There's other aspects to these things. I had a lot of experience over, I guess you could call it an awakening process to where, you know, my experiences, I guess you could say, you know, I had a lot of, I know that you said in the beginning that you weren't in aligned possibly with, you know, interdimensional aspects or whatnot, but I experienced certain things with these things that led me to believe that they were not under the same rules of time and space that we are.
Now, that's very interesting, and I'd love to hear a little bit more about that. Is this an intuitive feeling, or is this something that you observed, or was something that they did, something about them?
Many things I observed.
Was there like a shimmering or whatever? Please tell us more. We don't get to hear this very often at all.
I don't want to spoil too much what's coming out tomorrow in the next episode of this thing, but I will tell you that...
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Hold on. Before you do this, pitch the program. When's it coming on? I don't think I got that data, but tomorrow night on which channel?
Okay, there's the Flash of Beauty. I happen to be one of the accounts in the Flash of Beauty movie series. There's two movies. One, Flash of Beauty Bigfoot Revealed, and the second one is Flash of Beauty Paranormal Bigfoot, and I appear in both episodes.
Okay.
And they are releasing the complete interviews that they did with each of the witnesses, and they released the first part of my interview on Wednesday, which is about an hour, and then the second hour is going to be released tomorrow. And that dives in beyond the physical witness, the sightings, and mm-hmm. then it goes into everything that traversed after that, which was, you know, much more to the story, you know, and kind of a personal thing for me that I kind of feel like I'm very relentless, I guess you could say. I was a trained detective by the time I got involved in looking for these things. It was 8 years from the time of my first sighting until I began doing any research and joined up with a couple other people and kind of, and formed a research group at that time. That's still active today, but I'm no longer a member of it. I'm kind of just, in fact, because of my experiences, I pulled back out of this almost all the way, and then I was kind of compelled, I guess you could say, to not investigate it anymore. I had seen enough to kind of satisfy in my own mind, you know, to where that I didn't really need to see any more related to it. I gained enough knowledge, I think, even though I didn't know exactly what it was. I was very respectful, let me put it that way. I mean, these things were able to, after my second encounter, I should talk a little bit of my second encounter because I'll tell you some of the stuff. So I was, I got back involved in, well, I got involved in research for the first time in about 2008, about 8 years after my initial sighting.
Rich, you look awfully young to have accomplished all this.
Look.
All right, well, you look great, so whatever you're doing, you're doing it right. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I detox, you know, and I do oxidative therapy and, you know, passive stuff like that. And,
yeah, you're talking to somebody who understands what you're saying, so a lot of people out there get it. Good.
Especially these
you're
days.
You're taking good care of yourself. Yeah,
trying
of
anyway,
course.
So... I got involved and helped and co-founded the Olympic Project, and we came up with a camera trap project and idea, and we had a benefactor that was paying for it all. And I happened to be doing research at a location that was close to where I live, in my patrol area, actually. It was only a couple miles from where I lived, on an island in Puget Sound. Uh-huh. And I had set up a bunch of cameras there. It was close to where people live. Kind of a residential area mixed with timberland.
The island on the island.
20 miles long.
Is this on the island, Rich?
Yeah. Island's like 20 miles long, 4 miles across, and it's kind of close to the capital of Washington State, Olympia, Washington. It's in the Shelton area, Mason County, you know, and it's not far from anything. It's in Puget Sound.
Gotcha.
And,
I used to know somebody who lived on one of the big name touristy islands there. I can't remember which one it was now.
Well, there's a lot of islands, you know, the San Juans and then the islands in Puget Sound. And
I think it was in the San Juans, I'm guessing. But anyway, I know the area is gorgeous, so I guess.
Oh, yeah, it's really nice here. And so I had gone back to this area that we had been investigating before, but then pulled back out of the group had, and then I was going in there by myself because I knew we had found stuff. There was a lot of sightings on that island. And about 8 months into my, you know, research in there where I had game cameras, and I would go in there and walk around, and sometimes I'd do it on duty. And nothing really, hadn't found anything again. We had found tracks there, recovered a little bit of hair, fielded some reports of eyewitness accounts and things of that nature in this specific area. And I was in there one day because, and this was an unplanned thing, and because I was a cop, I carried a gun a lot of the time when I was off duty, especially when I was in the woods, because you just never know who you're going to run into. But this particular day, I didn't. I actually had ran for sheriff because I had been a whistleblower, and that didn't go as well as it should have. And as a result of it, I ran a political campaign to expose my findings to the public, and I lost the election. And it just happened to be the day, which at that time was November 11th, 2010, and about 10 years from my other sighting, 10 years and a few months.
Right.
And I was checking, on a whim, I pulled in there because I was pulling campaign signs, and I decided that I was going to check a couple cameras that were close to the road. Because this is an area, Rich, excuse me,
these are what people call trail cams, right? Wildlife cams?
They're Reconyx game cameras, and, I mean, they're older technology now. These are from, you know, 12, 15 years ago, so. A lot more expensive than they are now, too, but they were good quality. I mean, but, so, yeah. I go in and pull into this area that I'm going to, it's at like a school bus stop where I used to park, because it's between two roads and then along the main road, which was North Island Drive, between these roads called Sunset Hill and Haskell Hill Road. And the strange thing about this time I went in there, because I've been in this place a million times, I mean, not a million times, but regularly a couple times a week for, you know, 8 months or so. Hadn't seen anything, but this time I pulled in there, and from the moment I pulled into the spot I park, I had this, like, otherworldly sense or feeling telling me just to stay in the car and to go home, that I shouldn't be there. And I ignored it because I had no context for it at all, but it was certainly foreign. It wasn't something coming from me. I didn't know what to make of it. There was no context, so I decided not to pay any attention to it. And I got out of the car, and I started walking to the first camera, and I just had this nagging feeling of dread, I guess you could say. It was, it kind of felt like you were in a vacuum. There's no, like a black hole sort of thing, I guess. I don't know how to describe it, because I before that point, I never had sensed or felt anything of that nature, and I never felt it again since. So it was like...
as you look back on this now, that sense, that feeling you had, would that possibly have been directed intentionally toward you to keep away, Rich, don't come around here right now? Or was it something within you that was an intuitive thing that was being amplified by something out there? Was it a two-way kind of a feeling? You know what I'm getting at here.
Yes, I think it was more or less two-way, because my instincts were triggering in me, you know, and my intuition was warning me and telling me of something that I had no sense. I didn't, it was foreign, it was abnormal. And it was very quiet that day. There weren't any animals making any noises, no birds. It was November. It was really fairly cold, you know, but not quite a freezing temperature. It had been cold for some time. And it was just this a feeling of the environment that was abnormal, and the density. You know, it felt more dense, I guess you could say, like you're cutting through it, even, you know, kind of. It's very hard to explain even now, because you don't have anything to compare it to other than that one incident.
You're very articulate. You're doing a good job, and we get the general sense of the overview of the situation. So
thank you.
You're doing well. Yeah.
And so this is building up. It just is ratcheting slowly the whole time. You know, so I go and check this first camera, and I get to it, and I see that there's like a 16-inch impression next to the camera. And so this feeling and this fear, it kind of subsides, because I have some excitement that's shadowing it. So I go through the process of collecting the memory card out of the camera, and I do what I have to do to rearm it, and then I start making my way to the other camera. And then this feeling and this sense starts to build again, the dread. And I use the word dread because this was not a good feeling. It was very uncomfortable, to be honest. And I just kept having the sense just to go back to my car and leave. But I didn't pay attention to it because, well, I wasn't going to be controlled like that, and I was going to do what I set out to do. And I only had planned on checking a couple of cameras because I wasn't even dressed for it. I didn't have the right clothes on. I didn't have boots or anything. I was wearing tennis shoes that day, and so I'm having to avoid mud and stuff to not get my feet wet. And
gotcha.
So I make it over to this next camera, which is actually closer to the main road, where you can actually see and hear cars going by, you know, because the leaves are off the trees at that time because it's winter, you know, or almost winter. And that kind of comforts you because you're within range of civilization right there.
And again, this is, for our listeners, this is on an island 20 miles long, about, and you're out there in the Puget Sound. Okay.
Yeah, and there's houses literally within 150, 200 yards of where I'm actually at, in two directions from me, right? And so shouldn't be worried. So I get to this camera, and I have this big ring of keys, And I'm still, this feeling is just building in me, building and building and building. And it's intense, but I'm just kind of trying to suppress it. And when I start to go through these keys, I have like a whole ring of 25 keys, and I have these cameras cable locked onto the trees. So, you know, in this area, I'll describe it a little bit. It's kind of like what you would call an alder bottom, a little bit of a wet area with a creek that runs back about 60, 70 yards to the south of me, kind of southwest. And it's kind of open in front of me and to the right. And to the left okay. is kind of a thicket of evergreen trees, like cedar trees, that you can't really
when
see.
When you say open, you're just talking like about a meadow or something like that?
No, it's like salmonberry bushes, but the leaves have fallen off of them, and so you can see through it. And
got
it's kind
it.
Of a
okay.
clayish area with leaf litter on it because it's got these, you know, middle-sized deciduous trees that are spread apart, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's fairly open that you can see through it. There's light in there. The creek is running very low because it's cold. And I start to hear what sounds like twigs breaking off to my northwest.
Oh.
And the strange thing is it, they sounded closer than within the range I could see, but there was nothing there making the noise. But it sounded closer. But the direction it was coming was across the creek, you know, where there's a canopy of trees that come down, where the limbs come down low to the ground where you can't really see into it. And so I could hear these twigs, what I thought were twigs possibly breaking, just the periodic, you know, snap, 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 like something was out there and they're breaking, you know, branches.
Okay. All right. We're on the edge of the chair here. Go ahead. I get it.
So, yeah, and then I'm going through these keys and this is building the whole time. Like, you need to get out of here. You need to leave. I mean, I really had the feeling like my life was in danger, but like I said, I had no context for it or any reason for it, so I was trying to ignore it. But it was getting to me, you know, and I was going through these keys, and I remember thinking in my mind that I'm not going to go through this ring of keys again. I said, I'm, you know, to myself in my mind, I was saying, I'm out of here. If it doesn't open, I'm leaving because it's wet where I live, and these locks can corrode inside, and you have to mess with them sometimes to get them to open.
I see.
And sometimes you will have to go through the ring of keys again to find it because you didn't wiggle it good enough to get the lock to pop. And I had already told myself that I wasn't going to go through them again. I had to get out of there. And it just so happens. Oh, and then, you know, about halfway through the ring of keys, I hear a noise like I'll make the sound and see if you can hear it over the phone. Like a snort, you know, or something from a deer. And so it was somewhat familiar to me, so it kind of gave me a little comfort because then maybe I was thinking, well, it's a known animal to me. Maybe I'm going to see a deer here soon. And I didn't see
okay.
it. And then, you know, I keep going, and I get to the second to the last key, and it opens the lock. And I'm really relieved at that point because, you know, I'm going to get to successfully, you know, get the memory card out of this camera and reset it everything.
It sounds like every cell in your body was telling you to get the hell out of there.
It was. I was really scared at that point. And even though there was no threat there, just other
Understood.
Than my feeling. Yeah. And so I get to the process of starting to reset and rearm the camera and get a new card in. And then all of a sudden, right in front of me, like 20 yards away, I hear this super, like, powerful exhale, kind of groan, like a growl.
Got it.
And at that point, I had never seen anything to my left or anything in front of me because I kept picking up my head and scanning, like, between every key because I was a jumpy. So I've sensed and felt like there was something out there. And I knew the Bigfoot had been around because I'd seen a track by my other camera.
Yes.
And I had this abnormal foreign, you know, projection that was being put on me of these feelings that weren't my own. You know, they certainly, I mean, I felt that, you know, this is not a normal, something is putting this in you kind of to build up a scenario and a situation like it's theater, kind of like it's scripted almost, you know, like they're waiting for me. And, to come that day. And sorry, I'm getting away. So this growl and groan, and I know in my mind I already know what I'm going to see, and I'm terrified at that point.
You knew. Okay.
I start to lift my head up, and I'm wearing a red ball cap, and I can see this figure standing next to this tree at like 20 yards directly in front of me. It's just looking right at me after it growled and made this vocalization. And as I'm lifting my head up, it knows I'm going to be looking right at it because it's looking right at me. And in one motion, it kind of goes from standing vertically up facing me to squatting down and kind of shuffling like a gorilla would to the left for like 10 yards, like at an unnatural speed. And then it disappears out of view and it's silent. There's no sound. And what I noticed, you know, the thing looked like was like something that had super wide shoulders, and it was 8 feet plus again. And being 8 feet tall plus, the shoulders were at least 5 feet wide.
And it
had these massive shoulders that were like twice as robust and big as an NFL football player with football pads on, with
wow.
his head just perched down on these gigantic deltoids in these shoulders. And these huge arms that were long, and I could see that it was facing me, but I could see sticks and debris, like, interwoven in its hair, like a ghillie suit, like camouflage.
Okay.
And it was, like, a dark color, like sticks and stuff that were stuck on its hair, right? And it went down into a V right from the shoulders to the feet because its whole shoulders were so broad. It was so big. I mean, I don't know how to describe it, the size.
It sounds to me like you would know immediately this thing could, two long strides and it's got you. Something like
well,
that.
Well, I'll tell you that this was actually a thought in my mind as I was watching this thing. I was trying to figure out what to do because, like I said before, I was a tactical thinker, and I thought it was mm-hmm. flanking me and trying to cut me off to my car, and that's why mm-hmm. I went the direction it was going. So I decided mm-hmm. I was going to go straight for the road instead. And I remember turning, and I dropped the lock. I had rearmed the camera, but I had dropped the lock, and I was thinking to myself, I'm not picking that up. I'm just going. Because I was a high school sprinter. I ran the 100 meters and the 200 meters, and... Mm-hmm. I was pretty fast because mm-hmm. I was in track and I was played football and stuff. And I knew that based on what I had seen, that if I turned and ran at full speed, it'd be on me in two steps. I mean, there's no way
wow.
I could outrun it or get away. It would close on me so fast.
Understood.
And then I ran for the road.
Yeah.
And I got up onto the road and I was hyperventilating and I walked on the road to my car and I left and went home. And then, you know, I was shooken up bad. You know,
I don't know how you could explain that and describe it any better. You just did a wonderful job with that. But the idea of size, perspective, and knowing that thing, I mean, you would have been dead if it had wanted you dead. And yet you were. I guess let go and you ran to the road.
What it did, I thought was a show of force. I mean, it was, I think it wanted me out of there or for whatever reason.
I think it was posturing. Yes. Sure.
Yeah. And you know, it didn't end there though. The story keeps going with that encounter. I lived, like I said, about a few miles away from that geographical location, but about a 15-minute drive, because it's on an island.
Right.
And I was on the other side of the water from it. But the first thing that started happening to me is I started to wake up. So this happened literally for like 60 days in a row. I'd wake up at like 3 a.m. in the morning on the dot, and I would be wide awake out of a dead sleep. And I would have this impression in my mind every time. It was exactly the same. No words or anything like that. It was just this strong impression that I was able to interpret, and it would tell me to stop looking for them, to stop doing my cameras, and stop.
Really?
To stop.
Oh,
and,
this is fascinating. My instinct here, listening to you, is that that message was being definitely sent your way. You were supposed to think that. You got the message.
Well, here's the thing about it, though. See, I put a vast amount of time and effort into this and research, you know, time to do this. And at this point, you know, I had accomplished what I had set out to do, was to establish some contact and then try to build on it, you know, and see what could happen. And I didn't, my ego wasn't going to let me back down from this thing. So even though I'm being intimidated at this point, or told not to do this, I at first I was like terrified, and I was like, I'm not going to do this anymore. But then I started to think about it, and I figured I wasn't going to throw away all my investment on this thing, and I was going to keep going because I was right where I wanted to be now. So I ignored it, and getting woke up was, you know, it was certainly registering with me and impacting me, but at the same time I was thinking, you know, I was not going to stop doing it. And it got to the point where, after it kept repeating, I was ready for it. And when it happened, I asked the question. I said, well, what happens if I don't stop? What are the consequences? What happens? Nothing. And I never got any answer, no consequences or anything. It was just the same message. And eventually this subsided after a period of time. But by this time, you know, I'd lost the election. I was a detective at first, you know, when this happened. But then, or no, when this happened, I was already back on patrol. But so I was back on just regular patrol. I was working swing shift, and this is, you know, a few months after this incident now, maybe 4 months. And I remember the weather was a bit warmer again, so it could have been, you know, around early spring. And I would get home about 2 a.m., and I pulled into my house. And I lived in a residential area with a lot of little green belts around and trees and stuff, you know, but it wasn't by any means in the woods. And I pulled into my driveway at 2 a.m., and as soon as I stepped out of my car, I get like a volume 10 Sasquatch scream, like a high-pitched one from just across the street in the bushes from like, you know, 20 feet away, right when I step out. And it's volume 10. And it obviously frightened me, but my...
One scream, Rich? One long scream?
Just one. One long scream. And I acted like it didn't happen. I just walked into the house. And, you know, then there was a realization at that point that these things located me without being able, without following me home. And I think my impression was, because, you know, I was an investigator cop, I think they wanted me to know that. And they knew that I would consider it and realize it, that they had the ability, this power projection, that they could do this. Right, they can find you, they can wake you up in your sleep. And to be honest with you, up to this point, I'm still not positive it was them that were waking me up at night and giving me these warnings. Or
I don't think it's much of a stretch to accept that as the most viable option, that they were there. That it fits in line with everything else. These beings are obviously advanced. Now, I don't want to say E.T., I don't know what your thoughts about ET are, but the telepathy angle of this, the ability to sense your particular vibrational frequency, whatever, they found you. It sounds like that, very much so.
They can remote locate.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And there's one more, I'll tell this story, and this is going to be in there, Well,
we have, Rich, so you know, we have about 5 minutes left.
Well, then
is
we won't
enough?
Tell the story and people can watch it tomorrow.
Better yet. Okay. Where can they go to watch this?
It's on YouTube, on the Flash of Beauty channel.
Okay.
They can watch the first interview, and then the second one comes out, like I said, tomorrow.
Now, that's Flash of Beauty.
That's it, yeah. Now, I can tell you what my findings of what I believe these things are, after my experiences and my investigation, if you want to know.
Yeah, well, I'd like, if you would like, when it's convenient for you, have you come back and we'll tell this third part of the story, which people can see tomorrow, but I'd like to hear it directly from you at some point. It'd be great to have
you
back.
Fine.
That's just...
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right, well, you're very articulate, and it makes a big difference. You're painting perfect pictures in people's minds. Tell us what you think they are, then, at this point, your best projections.
Well, like I said, I don't think they live under the same rules of time and space. And I think they're some type of a higher being that has the ability to manifest in higher density situations, and they probably exist in lower density situations as well. And I think the density issue lends to their abilities, their otherworldly type abilities that they seem to have, be able to move so fast, even though they're so large and heavy, you know, and weight, they so eloquently and silently, you know, like ninjas essentially. And just the fact that the things that they were able to do, you know, just lends that they're not, they have abilities beyond ours, I guess you could say. They have, they're like, I guess they're just not limited by the high density environment that we're in the 3D. They have abilities.
So they're living in a 5D world, maybe something like that.
Or even maybe beyond that. You know, I don't know. But
there's a reason
lot more to this story.
Oh yes, I'm sure. Now, from my layman's perspective, there's a reason that not one has been captured that I know of or have heard about. There are never any corpses found. So maybe this idea of a crack in the matrix, a wormhole, isn't so far-fetched at all. Maybe when they die, if they die, they take their deceased somewhere else that we can't find them. I don't. There's so many potentials here.
Well, in Tibetan Buddhism, I don't know if you've heard of Bayuls before. Have you heard that term?
No.
Well, they have a belief, and there's actually been documents found that with directions and locations of these things. Well, it's places in these valleys that they believe that the spirit world and the physical world overlap, and these things potentially, you know, they say that, you know, there's deities that guard the entrances to these places and possibly inhabit them. And these may be one of those things that they are able to move in and out of these places where, you know, we may call them vortexes or different, you know, anomalous things like Skinwalker Ranch or some of these other places, you know, in the United States and throughout the world, where in the Himalayas and whatnot, where these places like this may exist. And it may be that these things come from those places and they're able to inhabit both worlds and go between them. I don't know, but there's certainly, you know, possibly some historical, you know, reference to this that's already documented, you know, that maybe we're overlooking.
I think you're probably quite right. It's obvious that they don't want to be found, so to speak. They don't want to be observed. They're eminently, we're no match for them.
But they do want to interact to a degree. You know, they reach out and touch you sometimes. You know, maybe the fact that these encounters and sightings aren't random.
I've heard this before from people, exactly that. They come up to a home and look right through the window at somebody. And I did have one fellow on the program long, long ago. He said he was picked up by one and carried a ways and then put down.
Like Albert Ostman. I don't know if you know that story.
I don't know if I've got the name right, but was that the guy? Was there a gun involved?
That's from the 1920s up in British Columbia, where this guy got packed off in a sleeping bag by one of these things and spent like 3 days with the family of him before he escaped and hiked out tens of miles or further out of the wilderness and able to find his way.
That's a great story. I'm not overtly familiar with it. I've heard reference to it, but I've never read it.
I bet some of your listeners have heard it before. It's well documented.
I'm sure. See, the average rank-and-file human being knows so little about the world in which they live. We're kept out of the loop. That's what this program tries to do, is just open that loop.
Yep.
All right, we're out of time. I really wish we could go on, but I would like to have you back on at your convenience, and you've got a lot of A lot of people out there listening right now who would love to hear more, so let's try and plan on that. So tomorrow...
Anytime.
Thank you, Rich, very much. So again, the time tomorrow that it'll be on YouTube?
Oh, I'm not exactly sure when it'll be up. I would suspect sometime Pacific time in the morning.
Okay, and it'll probably be rerun too, I would think.
Oh, it's going to be, it's going to be up there. Once it's up there, it's up there for good.
Okay. Well, again, thank you on behalf of everyone out there who's been listening, and what a fascinating story. We'll continue it next time.
All right.
Okay, thank you, Rich. You be well.
Thank you.
Okay, good night. What a terrific story, and very, very eloquently explained and described. I got the picture. Okay. That's it for tonight. Weekend is at hand. There's still time. Something's coming big. And I just hope all of you can do some preparing. Talk to you on Monday. In the meantime, you know where we'll be. And thank you for your attention. We'll talk soon. And be safe out there.